This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Byfield centers for Kempe. Kings trying to break out. Here's Kempe with a burst of speed to the Vancouver line. Left circle, high shot, he scores! Deneau in to help out, gains the Vancouver line. Ray Boris for Jordan Spence, up in the rush with a shot, tip wide to the goal, comes back near side. Fogel throws it to the net and couldn't beat Lankinen. Now Spence with a one-timer near point, he scores!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Heedle passes back left wing for Hughes, into the LAN. Drops left circle for Garland, got a shot away, he scores! Connor Garland with his second of the night, wins it for the Canucks with 33.8 seconds left in overtime. And Vancouver picks up a crucial 2 points on the road in Los Angeles. Garland's the hero. It's 3-2. Vancouver, the final.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Connor Garland, a two-goal performance, a game-winning goal in overtime after the Kings came back from a two-goal deficit in the third. A thriller in L.A. Canucks come up on top 3-2 over the Kings. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. I was talking about Connor Garland before the game, Bick, and mentioned how he's been really struggling these past 30 games, and he's been getting shots on goal, but they're not very dangerous. He's not picking corners. Hasn't shown an ability to do so. Well, he picked corners tonight, two, one on the power play and one in overtime, and helps the Canucks win. We'll bring Rand deep into the conversation in a moment, but they needed somebody to step up tonight to provide some offense and give Garland credit. Stepped up with two big goals tonight.
Give yourself credit on your talking about what you said in pregame, but in the first intermission, he said, hey, it might be a night where three goals gets you the victory.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
the third goal, the OT winner. And they managed to get it. And look, the level of resilience here in this moment, late goal, penalty in overtime, kill that off. There's Quinn Hughes, jumps on the ice and immediately is able to be the primary assist on the game-winning goal. So that's elements that, they get a successful night with the 2 points. But, yeah, there's still things of how to build this out and play with a bit more offensive consistency.
Yeah.
But tonight, they get the 3 points, or the 2 points with three goals.
Yeah, this text says, Gurley hurts Sat, say he is no threat, encounters with, aye, mate. So I like that. Good work. All right, let's bring Randeep into the conversation. And Randeep, I mean, we talked about this a lot, right? Especially if Hughes wasn't going to play, who was going to step up? Now, Hughes did play, and we'll get to him in a second, but they need someone to step up offensively, and tonight Garland did.
Yeah, for sure he did. And, you know, key moments there, Connor Garland gets the goal. And I love that first goal that he scored, especially because that reminded me of last year. I know it's a power play goal, but, you know, all of those players, Joshua, Heedle, Garland, playing close together, ends up getting set up into the slot area and by Philip Heedle, but that's, you know, a guy that's going to that area, attacking that zone, and they all combine playing close together to get that goal. But in overtime, just picking that corner, that showing off that shot a little bit. We don't see that from Connor Garland that often, but he showed it there. I thought that line had a fantastic game, 5-on-5, the Heedle, Garland, and Joshua line, where for most of this game, they were the Canucks' probably best line, most dangerous line, whether they were able to generate offense or not. At the very least, you kind of saw elements of Joshua and Garland and what they did last year, where they're able to swing momentum, they're able to pick up some zone time. So a great game, not only for Connor Garland to get those goals, and important goals at that, guys, the way that they were up 2-0, they, you know, give up that lead late, and to get the 2 points in overtime with that shot, big for Vancouver and big for Connor Garland.
Yeah, it was a tough night for all, like, overall offensive creation, right? It was six shots in the first, six shots in the second, four in the third, and just the one in overtime, which ends up being the winner. And so, yeah, like, I'm hard-pressed to think of a second line that, you know, consistently created some opportunities. Like, obviously, the Nils Höglander goal is the one moment, but, like, by and large, like, you know, the Suter Besser duo didn't really feel effective. O'Connor looked nice in forechecking roles, but it was definitely like Joshua's size and a little bit of speed, you know, playing a role and just trying to retrieve pucks and keep anything for that line.
For sure. And I thought, you know, even defensively, when you start looking at that play that Dakota Joshua made in the third period on Kevin Fiala, like getting the stick in the lane, that's a big play right there, man. You know, you end up allowing a goal there or a high quality chance. LA's in this game a little bit earlier and you don't know if it gets it to OT. But offensively, you're right. You know, this was a team, this was a team that had difficulties generating opportunities, especially in that third period where LA really ramped up their game. They brought that forecheck. They brought that puck pursuit, similar to what we saw against Vegas a couple of nights ago. That third period was the exact same way they played against Vegas. They ended up winning that game 5-2. But the Garland, Hedl, and Dakota Joshua line, I thought, you know, that was a major step in the right direction for that trio. Philip Hedl could have ended this game in regulation as well, coming down that left-hand side. Gets it past Dave Riddick, but can't beat the post. So, of course, this is a team that needs a lot more offense, and they're going to need, you know, the shot attempts were heavily, heavily in favor of LA in that third period. But if you can get one line going, that's a start. The next couple of games, they're going to have to hopefully work on those other lines as well, get maybe move some parts around, and certainly get a little bit, a lot more from other lines. But I really like what I saw from this line.
You mentioned that just overall, like, heavily outshot, and it's so tough at times because in game states where it's even and or when they're leading, right, like you want to try to clamp it down, and it's clear like they're trying to, like, their best path to victory is to live in this reality, but it's tense all the time, right, Randy? Like, even when you have a 2-goal lead, you know, everything seems okay and Kempe gets that goal, and it's only gonna embolden players to try to sit back even a little bit more, and like there's that overwhelming flood of pressure all of a sudden, then Fogel gets that goal and the game just feels like it's going to flip on its head. I'm just curious, like, how long they can live in this reality like that.
Yeah, the first 6-7 minutes of the period were strong. They were actually, yeah, you know, skating forward. There were, you mentioned Drew O'Connor, I thought there was a couple of shifts where he was bringing the speed, not only him, but whether it was Dakota Joshua, whether it was that Garland line, first 6-7 minutes it was pretty difficult for LA to generate speed through the neutral zone. But once that Kempe goal went in, and it was a bit of a slingshot play where he does a little give and go with Gavrikov and says, hey, feed it right back to me. Once that goal goes in, you could see Vancouver going back on their heels a little bit, and LA really, you know, taking advantage of that. They hit you with the forecheck, and I want to give LA credit because the way that they've been playing the last 2 or 3 weeks has been very different from what the LA Kings we saw at the beginning of the year. They have that forecheck. Their second efforts and their puck pursuit are excellent, and they make you rush plays or, yeah, they, you know, take 3 or 4 opportunities to clear the zone. So credit to them. But for Vancouver, yeah, there's not much firepower there offensively. I think there were moments where Elias Pettersson and others tried to hold the puck a little bit more through the neutral zone, try to make plays, but, you know, you get caught and it's going back the other way. It didn't really come off in the third period. So, you know, it wasn't pretty. Obviously, you know, you lose that game in regulation, we're having a very different conversation, but they win it at OT. So there is certainly some positivity there.
Fish, I mean, hey, listen, right now the Canucks need the points. And one thing we talked about,
for
too,
sure,
is like when a team goes through as big a change as the Canucks have gone through in season, it takes a little bit of time. The problem is the Canucks don't have time. They have to pick up points. They have to find a way to be in the race. They have to find a way to get in and hopefully maybe hit their stride a bit later on. But getting results is what matters the most, and getting off a weekend when you had nothing out of the 2 back-to-backs, it was imperative they get something. So they totally deserve credit for it, and you take it and you move on. But chance generation is an issue, and that's where, you know, we keep kind of coming back to with this team. And they had a good first, I thought, with some chances, but generating next to nothing the rest of the hockey game. And I think that's ultimately what has to change. And it was Quinn Hughes' first game back, and we thought, okay, with Quinn back, they'll generate more. Generated less tonight, but at the same time, when you get a guy like Quinn back after a 4-week layoff, he looked like a guy who's been off for a month.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know what his ice time finished at here. I'll have, you know, at around 21:38.
That's including overtime, right?
Yeah, and he was just below 20 minutes, if I'm not mistaken, in regulation, which kind of tracked with the way that they wanted to hold his minutes. But, yeah, there were certain moments where you could see maybe some giveaways, you know, a little rust, and that happens, right? This is a guy that obviously has been out of, we say 6 games, but the last game he played was January 31st, right? So in a normal stretch, it'd be a lot more than 6 games. We don't know where he is in terms of his where he's at. Is he 100%? Is he what that percentage point is? So I thought, you know, even if he's not 100% there or his game is not fully where you want it to be, he still adds so much to this lineup, guys, where, you know, even that moment just to hold the puck on that Garland goal, attract a little bit of attention and give Garland a little bit of room through the middle to get that shot off, that does make an impact, right? Even, you know, dancing the blue line, mixing up the shooting angle, like Vancouver hasn't been able to do that. So I think obviously it's over the next two or three games, you expect him to get better. You expect him to trend better. Now the question I have is, of course, with Tyler Myers, that injury in overtime did not look great. The way it hit him kind of in that collarbone area, maybe the clavicle area. You know, you get Quinn Hughes back. His game is hopefully going to round out here in the next couple of games. But now all of a sudden you may have another question with Tyler Myers. Anytime you get hit high with a puck and it looked like there wasn't much protection up in that area where he got hit, you certainly hope for the best. And the way he went off the ice, guys, it didn't look good.
Yeah, well, it winds up being 2 minutes and 53 seconds of possession time tonight for Quinn Hughes, which is a really high number even for Quinn. It just shows, like, just to have that calming presence that, okay, a lot of the burden is obviously on him to produce offense. He's the only one at a point-per-game pace so far for the Vancouver Canucks. But just, like, him at a spot where it's, okay, not 25 minutes even, and he's not at 100%, just the ability to just have the puck on Quinn Hughes' stick is such a release valve for the team on a whole.
Yeah, it just settles things down, right? You're not rushing plays. You've got a player that at his absolute best, you know, he can control the pace of the game. But even in a game where he's coming back from injury and he may not be at his best, he's still able to control the pace of the game. He's able to buy you a little bit of time when, you know, that forecheck is coming, especially in the opening 40 minutes, guys. And I thought, you know, a really strong job by him. The other thing is, you know, this was a game where I think LA over the first 20 minutes, 40 minutes, they didn't have – this is credit to Vancouver, that Vancouver is winning a lot of puck battles. Even though there's not much offense being created, you know, they were able to exit their zone. A lot of that was Quinn skating out of trouble. A lot of that was, you know, making those quick passes like Forbert on that pass to Nils Höglander on that 1-0 goal. But I think with Quinn, you know, anytime you can add him to the lineup and he's able to just slow it down and just makes everybody settled. And that's why I think the first 40 minutes, this team looks so good, where you've got an individual in Quinn Hughes that's just controlling the pace of the game. He's pulling strings. He's not rushing plays. Was there a little bit of rust that was being shaken off? Of course there was, mm-hmm. right? You haven't played in nearly a month. But, yeah, he just changes the game for this team when he's on the ice, guys.
Yeah, no doubt. And a lot of people are texting in. You mentioned Tyler Myers, James in Montreal, and others wishing the best for Myers. And we certainly hope for some good news when Rick Tocchet meets with the media. And as far as Rick Tocchet is concerned, he's taking a lot of heat, again, because the Canucks haven't generated a lot of chances, give up another goal lead in the third period. And people want to, you know, say that, or people believe that a lot of it comes down to coaching and being passive. How much of it is coaching? How much of it is lack of execution? I don't know, Randy, but at the same time, like, I would say, if you keep having the same issues, why do you still have the same issues? At some point, you have to find a way to overcome these things, right? Whether it's, you know, you're changing your message or getting through, like, the same thing can't keep happening consistently and you just saying the same things over and over again. You know what I mean? Like, they've been passive in the third period for a calendar year now. It's what they keep doing at all times, it seems.
Yeah, and it's kind of a I'm not really sure, you know, where the block is, if I will be honest with you. Is it, you know, the coaching? Is it the players understanding this in practice, understanding this in the video room, and then all of a sudden in the third period when you think you've got a lead and you're doing pretty good for the 6-7 minutes, and then you get deer in headlights a little bit when it's 2-1, when, you know, and that's happened to other forms of the Vancouver Canucks going back a couple of years, where, you know, you don't necessarily have that poise under pressure. And I think there's attempts like Nils Höglander holding onto the puck and doing something with to score that 1-0 goal. Like, that was a moment where you're saying, hitting him with speed, hitting to the inside, getting pucks through. That's what Rick Tocchet wants his guys to do. There's a couple other moments where I think Elias Pettersson was trying to do that, but quite simply, guys, he doesn't have the speed. He was getting caught two or three times when he's trying to make that move. He's trying to carry the puck through the zone, and when he get to the blue line, L.A. King would jump right onto him. I think with Filip Hedl as well, you know, Filip Hedl tried to do it a couple of times too. Didn't really come off. So I think there is an effort by these players to make it happen. The execution isn't quite there. So yeah, as a coach, you do have to maybe change up the way you're teaching it a little bit if it's not hitting. But with Hoglander, it seemed to register on that 1-0 goal. So it's difficult, of course. I think without the firepower in that top six right now, you started off, you know, we talked about the Hedl, Dakota Joshua, and Connor Garland line being the only line that really worked tonight. And that, to me, is the thing. That was a line that won battles. That was a line that was leaning on the LA Kings early on in this game and was able to pick up some zone time. Now, what other duos can you work off of, right? Pettersson and DeBrusk have their moments occasionally, but we haven't really seen that. Mm-hmm. Hoglander had a good moment tonight, and I thought his game overall was good. But what are your, like, you know, your duos that you're going to stick with and that you can rely on to get offense? I think that's up in the air right now. The coach is trying to bring the blender out and see what can work. Tonight, the Hedl, Joshua, and Garland line worked. Like, tomorrow, you need to see that again. You need to build some consistency and regularity in this lineup. And I think that's a part of it, too, where guys just aren't fitting on these lines in the forward group. And as for a coach, like, you can try different combinations. But at some point, there's a limit to how much you can do, right? That it comes down to personnel then.
Yeah, I think that is a big part of it, right? And before I let you go, the challenge that happened as well, after the 2-2 goal of Warren Fogle tipping it in, and, you know, I got to say, I thought it was a really reckless challenge because we looked at it on replay. There wasn't a lot there in terms of contact, and he was outside the crease anyways. It seemed a bit desperate, especially with the game being 2-2. I wonder how much their PK, which has been good, played a part into it, and also how bad the Kings' power play is.
Yeah, the PK was strong, and going back to the beginning of February, they've got a top four PK in the NHL right now in Vancouver. So I think a credit to them for sure. The challenge was a little puzzling to me because Batch and I were talking about that as the game was going on, where, hey, is that potentially, you know, a high stick? Or is, but goalie interference, the skates on the red line, the skates in the blue paint for half a second, then he pops out. And then beyond that, you know, maybe the right elbow grazes Kevin Lankinen, but that's well after the deflection. That's not before. So I didn't get that one. And, you know, usually Dylan Crawford and that coaching staff is on it. On that play, it did puzzle me. But listen, the PK did a heck of a job tonight. You know, yeah, that was a great job. And I love what Marcus Pettersson brings to that unit because he's able to patrol the middle of the ice. And now if we go back, if I'm not mistaken, in the last 17 opportunities for teams on the power play against the Canucks, they've killed off 16 of these opportunities. So, you know, what's working right now is they're getting good efforts from Suter and Blueger to start off the PK, and their defensemen, especially Pettersson, and the addition that he's made. I love what he's been able to do back there. And I in that case, I would say credit to the Canucks and their PK, because I think there's a couple of things that won Vancouver this game tonight, and the PK is probably top one or two in that, and Connor Garland, of course, in that line, yeah, would be the other one.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff, Randeep. We look forward to chatting with you tomorrow when the Canucks continue their road trip in Anaheim against the Ducks.
Sounds good, boys. And I do want to give a shout-out to DPD tonight. Elias Pettersson, a couple of chances for LA in transition. This guy kept stride for stride with Kevin Fiala, and there was another moment late in the game on LaFerriere. So, you know, we've talked a lot, and I know you guys have a couple hours to talk about everything that the Canucks did tonight and everything that Ian McIntyre ate tonight. Like, you guys will be hitting up that later. But Elias Pettersson, also, his transition defending was solid tonight.
Yeah, it was. I thought he did have a very, very solid game, and we look forward to seeing what the lineup looks like tomorrow night as well. Thanks, Randy.
Cheers, boys.
That is Randeep Janda, and that was your game review after a 3-2 Canucks overtime win over the LA Kings. Need more power and efficiency in your lineup? Meet the 2025 Honda CR-V Hybrid with rates from 2.49%. Visit bchonda.ca. And, you know, DPD, really was praised by the head coach before the game. The Canucks ran with seven defensemen tonight with Quinn Hughes returning. And Quinn Hughes' minutes, I wouldn't say that, I mean, were they reduced? Like, he played only six or so minutes after the Hedo goal. So maybe they were up 2-0. They kind of eased them a little bit with the game coming up tomorrow. I'm curious to hear what the coach has to say and maybe hearing from Quinn about how he feels physically tonight as well.
Yeah, it's been nearly a month of him not playing. 21 minutes is still a lot of minutes for a guy who's, you know, not 100%, but he's in the lineup. Plus, you had 7 D-men, so you can massage the minutes as best you can. So, you know, 21 minutes is probably higher than the number I thought coming into the game. For if you told me with the hijinks that happened in the old switcheroo there before of is he out? So 7 D-men, I would have said, 19 minutes for Quinn Hughes tonight. Well, it's 21-38, and we've talked about his influence. Has 5 shot attempts, 2 of them go on net. But DPD, again, it's only 10 minutes, but a noticeable 10 minutes with the physicality, especially. But, you know, rappelling a couple of plays away and using the stick. And, you know, he's still a young player who's still going to put on, like, I think, quite a bit of size as far as, like, overall weight. But, like, he even on plays when he's just poking the puck away, you can see he gets his body on guys, and guys move. And
yeah,
it's tough to deal with them.
It is, right? And, you know, tonight they really spread the minutes out, and Soucy and Pedersen both had over 10 minutes. Pedersen was a low man, DPD at 10 minutes and 10 seconds, and Soucy 11 minutes and 56 seconds.
Some guys are fighting for minutes, man.
Yeah, Hronek, 26 minutes tonight. So he was the guy that was given the big workload tonight. And again, Myers, hopefully he's doing okay. And we'll get an update here from the head coach coming up in a few minutes. Before we go to the phone board, 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. What are the people saying to the text inbox here, Bick? A lot of reaction, of course. You know, some looking at it from a more perspective, from a more optimistic perspective, and others really hung up on the fact that Canucks blew another lead. Bob says, big third period collapse. I don't get it, ? So you're getting a bit of everything, but ultimately, the points matter the most. Can you iron some of this stuff out as time goes on here?
But the thing is like, iron what out? Like, to become more offensive? I think you're asking way too much and expecting way too much of some of the personnel that they have, and so like they're trying to be low event.
No doubt.
Their biggest pathway to win is playing like this. It's tense and it's going to be uncomfortable, and you're going to have nights like tonight where it is close. You don't want to see blown leads, though. That's the issue.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't want to blow a 2-0 lead, but part of not blowing leads is also pushing the pace a little bit, because it can't just be you fighting. It can't just be you playing good defense, chipping the puck in, and going back and playing defense again. It takes spending some time in the offensive zone, cycling the puck down low, getting a few shots and looks. Just, you have to get the pressure onto the other side. And if you want to be able to protect the lead, you have to get the other team working hard too. And if the team is just going to be able to come at you wave after wave or get chance after chance, and all you're doing is giving them the puck back, that's, you're inviting them to eventually tie the game here.
Whether it was Saturday or Sunday, I talked about it hasn't felt like park the bus hockey, even if they've had blown leads and been lower event in third periods. Tonight felt like it was.
Well, they generated nothing. That's the thing.
They really didn't generate anything.
Like, we have the scoring chances down. Like, I have nothing for the Canucks in the third period. In the second, there was just a couple of those chances on the power play, of course. Garland scored to make it 2-0, and then there was a Myers shot off a post.
Mm-hmm. I had a Sherwood shot in the third period, the one where he joined the play late.
Okay, one. That's the one. There's the Pedersen shot off the rush, which wasn't even a dangerous shot, where the blocker save was made. It's next to nothing. And the rest were Kings. And to be fair, it's not like the Kings had an amazing amount of chances. They were able to get a bunch in the third. I thought they were able to generate a bit more, and that's where they took the game over and ended up tying it. But before that, I thought the Canucks did a good job of not giving stuff up, but they're not generating a lot. And I think that's part of the story. Don't have to be great.
Mm-hmm.
Just be better than non-existent. That's, I think, the biggest thing, right? All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. Let's go to the phone boards. Let's go to L.A. because I don't want somebody waiting in L.A. Too long.
So that's a game.
Let's go to Kyle in L.A. Kyle, thanks for calling in. Now, what are your thoughts here after a 3-2 Canucks overtime win?
Hey, guys. First time caller, long time listener.
Let's go. Rookie lap. Here we go.
Here we go. Rookie lap. Just trying to get on the 10 freeway, getting out of L.A. traffic. But it was a fun game. I go usually when the Canucks are in town. Don't go to Anaheim, though, because the commute down there sucks. But the atmosphere was great at the game. There are a lot of Vancouver fans, obviously. Some live here, like myself, expats. Others, you know, tourists. Not as much as I used to see, like, maybe a few years ago, but still a good contingent. The, you know, I didn't want to harp on Petey after the last caller who, you know, I don't know where he was going with the end of his long-winded rant. But, you know, I will say it was interesting. I don't know if you guys talked on this yet. I don't think I saw him in overtime. I'm not sure if that was a message being sent, you know, to him. But, you know, not the first time we've kind of seen him ride the pine a little bit here in the last few games. But also really impressed with DPD. And Forbert, I don't think, had a great game. But that hit he had in overtime, you know, as a power play for the Kings, he had that hit that I think pissed off Kopitar. And that was almost like the turning point. The next 45 seconds, you know, they were able to get Hughes on the ice finally. Mm-hmm. Momentum yeah. shifted, and then we know how the game ended. So, you know, I hope that this is a turning point, like, you know, the good old-fashioned TSN turning point to the season. I felt that way a few times. Optimistic, cautiously, that this might be that again. But yeah. The reality is like, this team isn't going to go far unless Petey plays, you know, at a level that's, like, worthy of a $7 million player, let alone an $11.6 million player. So, really hoping that guy finds something. I don't know, that guy needs like a sports psychologist. Wish him nothing but the best, diehard Canucks fan here. But unfortunately, that's the reality. Good game, great crowd, great environment. No one here in LA actually cares about hockey. There's like 20,000 King fans, but they all go to the games and they're really wild. But it was a good game.
Yeah, great stuff. Hey, Kyle, thanks for the phone call, man. Call back anytime. Good stuff. Calling in from LA. And I thought he made a great point about that hit by Forbert on Kopitar late in the power play that was able to kill the rest of the time off. He got Hughes on. And, you know, I know we talk about Pettersson a lot. I don't know what else there is to add to the conversation.
Well, just on the OT, he didn't play an OT.
He didn't play. When the power play was...
So I can detail this here.
Okay, go
so,
ahead.
Again, I don't necessarily agree with Hedl and Drew O'Connor starting OT.
They started OT.
They started OT, and Drew O'Connor ends up taking a penalty,
yeah.
obviously in OT, 52 seconds into OT. So the penalty killers go out, so he doesn't have an opportunity to have his shift there, obviously. Mm-hmm. Penalty killers go out, and it ends with Pugh Suter being out there for the PK. So he's out there after the penalty expires.
And there was a long change. That's where Forbert was stuck out there
and
for a long
Drew
time.
And Drew O'Connor yeah. steps onto the ice and has just out of the box. So he's yeah. going to play a shift here. Hronek is stuck on the ice for a long time. Forbert is stuck on the ice for a long time. Ultimately, they get a change, and it's Quinn Hughes that steps over, and he ends up feeding, obviously, Connor Garland for your game winner. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like, where in the alignment Elias Pettersson was meant to go, to be honest. Like, he should go out first.
Yeah.
And so that's the coach playing his, you know, Hedl and Drew O'Connor tonight in this spot. I'm surprised with it as well, but it's the penalty and getting stuck in your own end which plays a role here. In Pettersson not getting out immediately.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, we have to hit the break here. So keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text number box, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Keep those thoughts coming into our text number box, 650-650. Canucks win 3-2 over the Kings in overtime. We'll get to more analysis. We'll get to more reaction postgame. We'll hear from the head coach. Plus, we'll have an update on Tyler Myers, who left the game after taking a shot high up in the neck area in overtime. Did not return, but an update on the other side on the Canucks Center postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hedl passes back left wing for Hughes into the LAN. Drops left circle for Garland. Got a shot away. He scores! Connor Garland with his second of the night wins it for the Canucks with 33.8 seconds left in overtime. And Vancouver picks up a crucial 2 points on the road in Los Angeles. Garland's the hero. It's 3-2. Vancouver, the final.
It's Hollywood, so you know there'd be drama as the Canucks had a 2-0 lead. LA comes back in this game, and now in overtime, Hedl to Quinn Hughes with a little backhand pass to set up Connor Garland, and he goes top corner wrister and beats Dave Riddick to win Vancouver this game, and a much needed victory for this team. It wasn't easy, it wasn't pretty, but they get the 2 points as they head to Anaheim for tomorrow night's game. That is a big victory for this team, and it will give them confidence. And it's fitting that Quinn Hughes picks up the primary assist in his return.
Canucks get the victory. 3-2 in overtime over the Kings. Had a 2-0 lead. Kings tied it. A thriller in overtime. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bik Nizar on Sportsnet 650. And we'll get to the head coach coming up in a moment. But an update on Tyler Myers. Good news. Looks like he is going to be okay and may have dodged a worse situation and may even be an option for tomorrow. So Myers looks to be okay. Even if he doesn't play tomorrow, doesn't look like it's anything too bad. Hopefully that remains the case. But we'll get more detail here from the head coach coming up in a few moments. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. But what are the people saying to the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, Bik?
650-650. Yeah, some sources of frustration over the blown lead in this one. Jackson from Victoria, I'm glad Vancouver won. Maybe don't blow a two-goal lead in the third period. Only get 15 pucks on net after all that talk from Talkit. This one. So are we last year's Kings now? You know, I think that's the picture you paint 100%. You know, I know that they got a little critiques for their 1-3-1 and how negative it was last year, but they were still winning games and made the playoffs, obviously. That's kind of the scenario that's developing here for Vancouver. Yeah. They still need to get 2 points, and right now your best pathway to do it is make things as challenging and difficult as possible for the other team rather than your own offensive creation.
And
Alex and Burnaby says 80% Hughes is still good.
Not bad. Not bad at all, right? And still gets a primary assist. And he did meet with the media, spoke to TNT, and we'll play that coming up in a bit after as well. Keep your thoughts coming in. We'll get to more of your reaction here as the show goes on. But let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tile Town.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like. Obviously, giving up the couple of goals. I mean, we got to talk about that, but I thought obviously the penalty kill was huge. I mean, that's a huge, we missed the challenge and then we got a penalty in overtime, so to kill those two penalties off, a lot of guts. Got to give guys a lot of credit.
It's an obvious question, but what does it do for the team to have Quinn Hughes back in the lineup tonight?
Well, I mean, you know, he's a driving force, right? He's has the puck possession a lot. He's not afraid to make plays. You know, he's our star player. And not only that, I think in the dressing room, he's a common influence for a lot of guys.
Tyler, take one, was it in the neck?
Yeah, right in the neck, yeah. I think it hit a nerve, he's dizzy. He might be okay for tomorrow, might have dodged the bullet, but yeah, I think he got hit right in the neck. Might have saved the goal, I don't know.
What'd you see on the Fogel goal that made you want to challenge it for a goal?
Well, he hit his blocker, but he wasn't in the crease from the angle, so, you know. So my mistake, you know, I don't think he had his foot in the crease. If he had his foot in the crease, I think it would have been no goal. But because he was out of the crease, we thought he hit his blocker. So, yeah.
What do you think of the way his sort of new look top nine forward group performed?
I thought we were better through the middle of the ice on the rushes. I thought I saw a little bit, better, and we still got a ways to go. I thought O'Connor on that line gave some speed. I thought he had a good game tonight. I just think we spread it around. I think it's important that, I thought Hoggy with the big goal for us, he added some juice, especially early in the game. So I think it was kind of balanced, to be honest with you. And we went 11-7 to protect Hughes. So it seemed like I got more guys in the game, I think.
Can you walk us through, because you take warm-ups, Hughes is out there. You do line rushes, just doesn't take them.
Yeah.
Sort of last minute. That decision, did it come as down to the wire as it looked?
Yeah, it was like, I don't know. It was like 11 minutes, and Huggy called me in the medical room, and we had a little bit of a talk, and he kind of persuaded me. It was one of those things that I don't know what he played tonight, but the original thought was 16 to 17 minutes. I think, I don't know, do you guys know how much he played? So that was original load management. But he said he felt pretty good out there, and you know, I think he's pretty good right now. So, you know, that's the one thing that you know, he wanted to, you know, he wanted to play, you know, and we felt that he was safe enough. Talked to the doctors that
you,
he was fine.
You have to cross stuff out on the lineup card or anything? Like, was it that close?
Well, it was about the 8-minute mark, and we had to tell Bainesy he was not playing. So, yeah, but that's probably the longest I've ever gone without making a lineup sweep. So, I don't know what the wire is. I think it's 7 minutes, or you got to get your lineup in. So, I think we had about 90 seconds left. So, yeah.
Your team is so close to that last wild card spot. What are the things you have to do to clean up to get that?
Well, I think when the pressure hits us, I think we got to keep pushing. I think for whatever reason, it's not that we stopped making plays. It's almost like we're playing safe, and we just got to get over that hump. You know, if you're the fourth man in the rush, just because it's, you know, you're up or you're, you know, you're a tied game with 5 minutes, you got to be that fourth guy in the rush. You can't be scared to attack. But saying that, you also have to understand that, you know, you got to support people and stuff like that. Obviously, we're a little disappointed giving up the 2-0 lead, but got to give the guys credit. Killed off 4 minutes, and we, you know, Gars with a big goal. So you got to give them a lot of credit.
Where'd the game flip in your mind in that third?
I felt we were chasing the puck. They were flying through the middle. Mm-hmm. They started to go, and we didn't pick them up. For whatever reason, we were standing still in the neutral, and I think we gave them life by giving them the middle of the ice. That's something I can't stand that. And I think they got about 4 rushes, and I think it put us on our heels, to be honest with you. But saying that, like I said, I think you know, we're going to take the positive out of it.
That's Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium. From vision to reality, Tile Town has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. So the good news on Myers, hit a nerve, but he should be okay, and said maybe he saved the goal.
Just promoting that toughness, right? It's like, hey, yeah, he got hurt, but... because he seems like he's okay, let's throw in a little line in there. It's like, yeah, save the goal.
Take his life, but not the goal. You know, like, that was pretty good. But
yeah, I mean, look, you might not be wrong.
poor Myers. But good news, he's going to be okay,
yeah,
and might even play tomorrow. So that's really positive. And that was interesting, some insight onto the decision to play Quinn Hughes and how Huggy had to persuade him. And he mentioned, like, they had 90 seconds to make that lineup decision, and they had to get it in. Otherwise, he wouldn't have played. And they told Baines, who thought he's playing, hey, yeah, sorry, bud, sitting this one out.
The North Trophy's going in. It's like, yeah, all right, I guess so.
Yeah, sorry. You know.
But yeah, it's tough because you have to submit the official lineup card, which happens minutes before the game. So yeah, it's tight there.
Yeah, so it's because initially the lineup card had him out,
mm-hmm,
and that's what we all thought. And literally, as we were about to sign off on the postgame show, on the pregame show, we found out that Quinn Hughes was indeed playing. And he mentioned, again, like, we talk about the blown leads and what happened in the third, and he kind of stuck to the script. Like, he's said this many times before, right? Like, when pressure hits, we have to keep pushing. And just because your lead, you know, you're tied in the third, doesn't mean you can't be afraid to attack when you have chances. At the same time, again, like,
He mentioned too, like, obviously you have to support people.
Of course.
So it's doing it from positions, like strong positions.
But then that's just common sense though, right? Like,
of
that's
course.
Like, that's like anything in life. But it's like time and place, right?
But right now it's like time and place is like dictating all the actions.
Yeah.
And
no,
so
I know.
It's like,
they're
doing it. The way he's phrasing it, it's like, be aggressive in support positions, but it's almost like there's a disconnect between, like, oh, when am I supposed to be aggressive, or like, how aggressive should I be? I'd rather just play it safe. And again, like, there's a disconnect there of how much the players are willing to absorb offensive creation and what Rick Tocchet is calling for.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's the same story.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're hearing the same things and you're seeing the same things. Now, you won this hockey game. It was great. And like we said, like, you know, it's about getting the points. That's the most important thing right now as they, you know, go down this stretch drive. And this was a big game. I don't think we should be discussing at all the Canucks catching the Kings, like, even winning this one. Like, the 1 point, it's, they have to play so well for that to be a reality.
Yeah, they're 5 points back right now.
Yeah, and the Kings have games in hand.
Two games in hand.
Yeah.
So, like, very,
those two
very
games
tough.
They lost coming out, like, really hurt them, yeah. You know, especially with how the Kings winning games too. They've been on a really good run. I think 5-1-1.
And this is the last game against the Kings as well, who they've struggled against this year as well.
So that they took care of winning the game was huge, getting the 2 points. So I'm not concerned about that.
Sorry, they won the first game. They lost the 5-1 game.
Yeah.
So they get 4 points from the Kings this year.
Yeah, it's not too bad. But you know, they're quite a ways away from where the LA Kings are. So there are things that the Canucks obviously have to do better, but no, you're just happy at this point to get the points. And, you know, he mentioned the middle of the ice, and we kind of saw that on Nils Höglander too. So, like, on the goal. So Höglander scored the goal, and he mentioned how he liked Höglander early in the game, and then he spoke about how
he had two comments there. If you link them together.
Yeah.
Again, it's like, it's being really critical. Like, poor Nils Höglander. Like, this is the reality he's got to play in. Like, he has a decent game, scores a goal. You're like, did all the things that Rick Tocchet talked about, like, get to the puck to the middle of the ice, be creative, and the best offensive moment in this game was from Nils Höglander. And he still only plays 14-28. Like, didn't even crest. Again, 14's a nice number.
That's more than I thought he'd get 15 tonight.
And I'll bring it up here, like how much he played after his goal in just a second here. But yeah, he mentions, like, yeah, early played well. And then later talks about being stationary in the neutral zone and allowing them to, giving them life.
Yeah.
And allowing them to fly through the middle of the ice. And you watch that Kempe goal. Like, obviously, Kempe goes around Pedersen, but it's like he's the lone guy on a forecheck. Höglander, like, covers for Pedersen in the center circle. Perfect positioning, and he even, like, shoulder checks, does everything right, but then he, like, the shoulder checking almost, like, sends him into a direction he probably shouldn't go.
Yeah.
And he tries to pick off a potential pass from Gavrikov to the far wing to Mikey Anderson, who's actually pulling back into the neutral zone rather than going up ice, and he vacates the middle of the ice, and suddenly Kempe skates right through all that space.
Yeah.
And that's, like, the push and pull of, like, yeah, we want to get Höglander up, and the coach just looked at these moments and was like, dude, you can't do that right there.
And it happened in other instances that did not lead to goals as well. It wasn't just the one instance, and that's why the Canucks were on their heels, especially late in that third period. And this text says, another game without Pedersen, Kempe said, hey, watch what the real Swedish star looks like on the 2-1 goal. You mentioned that. And on Pedersen on that play, because I saw some criticism on the text inbox too, that it was his fault. You're in that situation, you're forechecking. You're trying to put pressure on the opposing team. And if anything, if Höglander is in the right spot, what he's doing is forcing him to skate into trouble.
Completely eaten up.
Well, and it's also like where you want him to go. You're forcing him to go to, like, you're forcing pressure on him, and you're forcing him to turn up ice into a wall, essentially. And if you do that, it forces a chip in, or you get the puck stripped from him. But if it's a chip in, you have numbers to get back to get the puck and then transport to go the other way. It's about putting pressure on players. And if you play as a 5-man unit and somebody's in the neutral zone defending, if you force guys into that wall, so to speak, into traffic, they're going to part with the puck, right? That's what you're trying to force, and that's why it's so important for the guy who doesn't have the puck to be in the right spot.
We always talk about threat assessment, right? So if you go through this play, again, Mikey Anderson is skating back to his own blue line
because
he initially rushed up, pass didn't come, and he's going back, and that's where Höglander goes to take this pass away from Gavrikov off the wall. So even if Mikey Anderson gets that pass, he's still skating to his own blue line.
Yeah.
So where's the goal threat going to be coming from? And that's where he chooses to jump out to. And it's Kempe who takes the pass. And again, like, Kempe makes a pass out wide to Gavrikov as Pedersen's forechecking on him. And he turns faster up ice on Pedersen. And he obviously dusts Pedersen with his speed. So, yeah, absolutely. Like, he gains an edge there. But part of it is the responsibility for the guy to peel back into the middle of the ice once Pedersen activates high into the play.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen in this moment. But again, like, I Höglander, like, has a nice game and he scores a goal. It's these things are what Rick Tocchet is going to quickly pounce on for all the thoughts of, like, why doesn't Höglander play more regularly? Like, that's a sense of frustration there from the coach.
Yeah, no, I get it. At the same time, though, he had a beautiful goal. I mean, opens up the scoring for the Canucks, and he brought the energy you wanted to see. Had the aggressiveness on the forecheck. He's making plays, and that's what you want to see more of.
It's a positive night for Nils Höglander. Like, fantastic. 3 hits tonight.
All we're doing is breaking the game down and going.
But that one goal, and just trying to highlight what the coach is talking about.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's not to be critical. It's just like, but yeah.
It just feels tough all the time. I feel bad for Nils Höglander tonight because, like, he has a good game, and Rick talks like, yeah, highlights this thing that's his responsibility. And you can just see like that disconnect at times.
Yeah, for sure. And Sean and Campbell River says, we won. And I agree. Like, you know, I think the most important thing is getting the victory. It's one of those games that's a bit of a mixed bag as far as overall performance. They had the lead, blew the lead, go to overtime, end up on the PK. And next thing you know, they end up winning the game, which is fantastic. You take the points, but it's one of those where it's a lot to break down.
4 for 4 on the PK tonight, which is, and he credited the PK, obviously.
Fantastic.
The one after the challenge and then overtime as well. They stepped up and managed to do it. And a lot of people have texted him about Derek Forbert, what he did on the OT PK as well. Rick Tocchet also taking blame for the challenge. It did feel like a bit of a YOLO challenge.
It came off as desperate, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
At the same, like I will, like he didn't mention it because I don't think he's going to go out there and say, yeah, they have a bad power play. But the LA Kings power play is one of the worst in the league. They're at like 15%, and the Canucks PK has been red hot recently. So maybe it's also playing the numbers a bit and saying, hey, we can take this chance because we feel good about the special teams. But I still thought it was reckless given the game state late in the third and it's 2-2. But I like the fact he took accountability at least.
Yeah, and again, the rule in the rule book says incidental contact with a goalkeeper will be permitted and resulting goals allowed when such contact is initiated outside the goal crease, providing the attacking player has made a reasonable effort to avoid such contact. And Fogle clearly does in this spot, getting out of the crease and doesn't back into Lankanen at all. And so Lankanen makes his motion with the blocker and makes, like, he definitely makes contact, but at that stage, like, Fogle's done everything he can. As far as people asking about why the high stick wasn't called off, it didn't look like high stick to either of us because it doesn't hit the blade of the stick, which looks like it's above. Yeah. It hits just below that, and that part looks below the bar. And also, all goals are reviewed.
Yeah.
There's a video goal judge in the building. Obviously, they got the head office in Toronto. All goals are reviewed, so that's why that's not challengeable.
Yeah.
Because it is reviewed.
Yeah. And if they deem like it, if they deem it's an issue, they'll call down and get the official take a look at it as well. If they feel like, okay, this is pretty close. That's not to say that mistakes don't happen, but us watching replay as well, it looked like it was fine. Now on the
low
trip,
angle from outside the zone is the one that showed it looked like it was under the bar.
Yeah, so I think that one looked like it was okay. The goalie interference one we just went through as well. The Drew O'Connor tripping call in overtime. He gets the puck.
Mm-hmm.
But he does also take the player down. He takes Fiala down. It's hard when you watch it from the reverse angle, it looks like he gets the puck first. It looks like he kind of gets a skate on the puck first. So I think that's a fair call.
Simultaneous?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty fair call overall. It's pretty close. And even though you get the puck
first. There's nothing explicitly written in the rule book about
getting the puck first.
Puck first is fine.
It's not. It's more about, like, you can't take a guy clean down.
If
you make a clean play on a puck and a guy ends up tripping afterwards, that just happens. But this is not what happened.
It says accidental trips which occur simultaneously with a completed play will not be penalized. Accidental trips occurring simultaneously with or after a stoppage of play will not be penalized. Again, that's not an accidental trip.
No,
that's
like
I'm going for a motion and I'm simultaneously tripping you.
Yes.
So, again, it doesn't say anything about, like, well, you got the puck first. You're okay to just wipe a guy
that's
out
the rule.
Completely.
Now, that's not to say, again, officials make the right calls on these things, but as by the letter of the law, there's no issue with that. With that call, to be
there
honest.
You go.
So, yeah, and I hate defending the officials.
Yeah,
because I mean, a lot of them do a very poor job. But
and reading the rule book, I always have to put my rule book voice
such
on.
Such a nerd, I know.
Yeah,
it's
not
on.
Fun. Yeah,
I know. You got like a compass in your.
Well, my pocket protector.
Pocket protector too.
Do I have a pocket protector on this shirt?
Not on this one. All right,
but you know, rule 57.2. A minor penalty should be. No, just
I know.
I'm going to read it in that legalese ref voice.
I know. It's not a lot of fun. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of your thoughts, more of your phone calls as well. That's coming up next on the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Deneau in to help out, gains the Vancouver line. Ray Forrest for Jordan Spence up at the rush with a shot tip wide of the goal, comes back near side. Fogle throws it to the net and couldn't beat Lankanen. Now Spence with a one-timer near point, he scores! Relentless pressure for the Kings, and Warren Fogle tipped it home in front from the top of the crease after the drive from the line by Jordan Spence. And the game is tied at two.
And the Kings are coming in waves, aggressive with the forecheck, second efforts, and really piling on the pressure on Vancouver. And on this play, a number of opportunities, a couple of cross-ice passes, and the puck ends up going to Jordan Spence. And this puck is going wide, and Fogle ends up redirecting it.
Canucks win in overtime, 3-2 over the Kings. Even though the Kings tied it late, Canucks do hang on and get the victory. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. It's Sat and Bick here on Sportsnet 650. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to the phone boards coming up in just a moment as well. We are going to hear from Quinn Hughes, plus we'll try to hook up with Ian McIntyre from LA, but it was a late game, of course, and sometimes it can be a bit of a challenge to make sure that we get him before his deadline and he has to send his piece in. So we'll see how that all goes. And, you know, when there's ice cream available too, like Fast Eddie Gregory tells me, that can always throw another wrinkle into the situation here. So we'll see how it goes. But people in the text inbox, a bit of everything. Rahul Paul P says, I like Hedl's offensive game, especially transporting the puck. His defensive game leaves a lot to be desired. Do you think management sees him as a potential 2C moving forward? If not, will Hedl be happy being a 3C again, making nearly $5 million? It's a fair question. I thought again tonight he was dangerous. Defensively, sure, there are some issues, but there was a bottom line tonight. And when you bring a bottom line, you set up a goal as well as he did when Garland scored on the power play to make it 2-0. I'm okay with some issues here and there. And somebody else texted in, I think it was Josh, who was saying, I feel bad for Hoagie. The only way to overcome this is score points. Score points and you can live. And that's, I think, ultimately what Hedl is going to have to do. It's like JT Miller. He wasn't perfect, but he scored. If you score, then they'll live with some deficiencies here and there.
Certainly. And we'll be facts only here. Hedl closer to $4 million than $5 million. It's 4.43750, 4.4, which is like standard. If you want to get to the stage of pushing for real competitiveness, you're gonna have to pay about $5 million, at least $5 million for a third line center. It's a pivotal role on a team. So I've never looked at that and said, like, oh, that's a spot that it's going to end up being too much if he ends up being your third-line center. It's more just the makeup of how you manage it all, because you're going to need a defensive stopper there, and Filip Hedl's not really that. So where are you going to spend that money to go get a real, like, shutdown defensive center?
Yeah.
But the $4.5 million, like, does not worry me.
No, the money's honestly, even if he plays down the lineup with the speed he brings, and the one thing they're exploring him as a center now. Worst case, he's an interesting winger, isn't he?
Yeah, because like the traits really play.
Yeah, like he's a fast winger with skill, can do some dynamic things, right?
It also means you got to go find two centers.
No doubt, and that's what I'm saying. But I'm saying, like, as far as the money goes and how he would fit in, even if you find another center or need a different profile, I think he's talented enough that he's an intriguing top six piece. Can he be a first line player? That, I think, is going to be the big question. But he can be a solid, like a very solid top six second line player, and it's very early parts of his career in Vancouver. He's getting an opportunity he's never had before, so we'll see what he does with it. But he was, I thought, offensively really dynamic again tonight. At times, again, the Canucks did not have many dynamic moments, but the few they did have had his name around it.
Yeah, he gets the primary assist on the Garland goal. And I actually thought, or I'll save this for the game review. I think he plays a pretty big role in the Garland game winner as well, where he gets a secondary assist. So I'll save that for the game review. But Pine Rider's also mentioning 650. Hedl looks just so much faster than everyone else. And also saying EP40 with incremental improvement, feet moving, more intensity, but still incapable of doing anything interesting, let alone magical. And that's the bar right now for Elias Pettersson to restore faith.
Yeah.
It's got to be the magical stuff, that even the nice stuff of like, oh, yeah, win the puck battle and all these things. It's it's incremental improvement. I like that text.
Yeah, I mean, Josh had mentioned similar thoughts. Says, am I the only one that thought Pettersson made some good plays tonight on both sides? Also, prior to tonight, his line had the only goals they'd scored post-break. I don't know. Unless he's dominating, nothing will be good enough, though.
But such is the bar now that he's got to dominate because it's been so lackluster for a year.
Yeah, and ultimately, like in a cap world with a salary, like everyone keeps pointing to the number all the time, right? This one here, Bulldog23. Hi, Sat. You mentioned this afternoon that Connor Garland presents no threat and should be taken off the power play. Well, he must have been listening because he had a strong game. Keep up the good work. He did, and we let off the show with this. And yeah, I was critical of Garland today. I mean, you know, he's been had 9 points in the last 31 games coming into the game tonight. I didn't like his work on the power play because his shot wasn't a threat. Well, he certainly made me eat those words today because he roofed one on the power play. He then picked a corner in overtime to give the Canucks a victory, and it was great. Honestly, like they needed somebody to step up, and Garland stepped up big tonight. And you know, my biggest thing on Garland, and I mentioned this, was it's more about next season. We're talking about big picture. Where does this team go? And if I'm looking at Garland, who's going to be 30 when he's a free agent, has one more year left on his contract, when we're talking about the offseason, is this somebody who's going to be here long term? It's just, you know, what decisions they have to make, right? Just a reality. But as far as this season goes, he's been one of their better players. I don't want him to go anywhere in season. Off season, we can have a different convo. I wanted to see more from him offensively, given the minutes he's played. And tonight, Pick, he came up huge.
Yeah, and to your point, it was six games without a point. It has been 4 points in the last 17. So there was merit to, hey, got to produce.
Yeah.
Have to produce. You're one of the highest, or not overly extensively paid, but as far as like who they looked for offense, you're the fourth highest paid forward on this team and getting a lot of minutes. So that
19
requires
a game. Yeah.
Yeah, that requires you to produce. And yeah, tonight, awesome. The two goals, 16th of the year. So he keeps having strong game, or he keeps tallying this up in his career high. He's getting closer and closer to it. It's 22 in Arizona.
And we'll talk about this guy a bit more on the other side a bit later when we do the game review. We're going to get to a phone call here in a second. But Dakota Joshua tonight, is there a coincidence how good Garland was, Joshua was, how they work, how well they work together? I thought, you know, to the point we've made throughout the show and spoke to Randeep about, the one Canucks line that was really good tonight was Garland, Joshua, and Hedl, right? And I thought Joshua was a big part of that as well. All right, let's go to the phone boards. Let's go to Raj in Abbotsford. Raj, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight after a 3-2 Canucks win?
Hey, guys. So my thoughts are basically Rick Tocchet, I don't think he should be back, regardless of if they make it to the playoffs or not. It's just boring hockey, right? Like, I feel like Bruce Boudreau hockey, even though they played bad, was much more exciting to watch than this, even when they lost. It seems like similar to, like, I don't know if there's any Whitecaps fans here, but like when Carl Robinson came in, he was like in his first season doing everything exciting soccer. And then once he ran out of ideas and teams figured it out, you know, it was park the bus. And Rick Tocchet is doing the same thing, park the bus hockey. Score a goal and you just park the bus, and it's just so predictable how they play, and it's just going to drive fans away. And I don't think this type of hockey even gets you to game 7 of the first round. You don't win with like ultra defensive hockey. My other thoughts are like Elias Pettersson, I think he needs to go. Like 14 months of the same injury that hasn't healed up, what's the guarantee that that injury is going to heal up in this offseason, and he's going to have a proper offseason training this time? There's no guarantee that he's going to be 100% healthy and we're going to see that 100-point Elias Pettersson back again. My last question for you guys is, if the Penguins fire Mike Sullivan, do you think the Canucks should get him? That's all I got, guys.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. Raj calling in and critical of Rick Tocchet and of Elias Pettersson. As far as the question goes, if you're not committing to Tocchet, or Tocchet doesn't want to commit to you, Mike Sullivan, I like Mike Sullivan a lot. If he's available, I'd go after him.
He's on the list. Are they going to be prepared to pay for Mike Sullivan?
Would I go after him? That was a question.
Sure.
Yes, I would. I don't have the money to go after him, though, ultimately, and that's going to be the question.
I got $1.16. That's what I got, Mike.
Will you coach for that here today? So, I mean, on that,
got a couple of gift cards flying around too.
So on that part of it, you know, that's going to be a bit of a bit of a problem here. I mean, not a problem, but I mean, it comes down to, like, I know, money-wise and all that. But I do think management, especially with their ties, would like Sullivan. But I mentioned this on the show this week. I think the Canucks and Tocchet are going to be talking at some point here before the season is over. And maybe after the deadline or perhaps, I don't know, before, but they'll have a discussion here about what to do long-term. And if I think the Canucks want to keep him. However you feel, the Canucks want to keep him. I think they'd like the job he's done. I think the question is, how committed is, how willing is he to stay here?
And if you're prepared to back up some Brink trucks here, because A, he's going to be in demand.
Yeah.
B, he's just coming off a Jack Adams season. And C, like, what are your better options? And this is the thing I'll bring up the today on the show. Like, you don't really have better options on the market. You're going to, as part of your, like, convince Quinn Hughes plan, you're going to get a first-time NHL coach. Sketchy spot to be in.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we'll get to more analysis on the other side. We'll hear from Quinn Hughes, plus more on the Canucks Central post-game show on Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Quinn Hughes to center, drops to Philip Hedel, right wing for Connor Garland into the LA zone. Played it onto the boards for Besser, dumped it to the end boards. Garland got it behind the net for Hedel, back to Besser, right point, shot towards the goal. Hedel tipped it wide of the net, Joshua gets it left corner for Hedel in front. Garland with a one-timer, he scores! He's knocked to the ice by Anderson as he fires it high into the net past David Rittich. And the Canucks extend their lead with a power play marker off the stick of Connor Garland. It's 2-0.
And this is a road hockey style of goal that Rick Tocchet is going to love. There's a mad scramble as Philip Hedel goes behind the net. First loses the puck, then he gets it right back. Makes a backhand pass to Connor Garland, who's all by himself for about a half a second before Mikey Anderson tackles him. But he gets the shot off right before that. Nice little backhand pass by Hedel as he rounds the corner. And Connor Garland makes it 2-0 Vancouver.
Canucks 2-0 lead. Go on to win 3-2 in overtime over the Kings. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And Raj called in and then people... We're not very happy with Raj's call. He got dragged in the text inbox.
It's not... Again, I don't agree with Raj, but there's a lot of people that do send that in into the inbox quite often.
Yes, he gets those... Yeah, for sure.
And now you hear it in a call, and a lot of people are jumping to Tocchet's defense in the inbox.
Yes.
650, 650. So again, it's coming in with pushback, obviously, but just to give you a heads up, like it we do get that a lot.
Yeah, Jason from Langley, Josh in Mission, and some others had some words, some choice words, but some words for sure.
Holden in Poco says, only us fans would want to fire a Jack Adams winner the year after winning the thing for a good reason. Oh my Lord, it's Groundhog Day with some of you.
All right. Okay, you heard the goal coming in, Connor Garland making it 2-0 on the power play. But let's go back to the first goal of the game, Bick. And, you know, the Canucks, the one thing they've improved with Hedel and O'Connor is their speed up front. Hughes played tonight as well, and they had moments on the rush, especially in the first period, where they had some opportunities, and the first goal happens by generating some speed through the neutral zone.
Yeah, it's off a defensive zone faceoff. Forbert ends up picking it up from Blücher, and you watch Hoglander on this play, and he's going up the ice and course corrects and gets into space,
Create
a 2-on-1 on the other side of the ice. Forbert makes a nice pass, and then Hoglander just takes the pass and uses Sherwood's middle drive as he goes through the two defenders and just cuts underneath and gets to the spot and crosses the middle of the ice as well, so forces David Rittich to move left to right, and then just pops it up over the glove. And, you know, I think it was Edmonton had fallen over trying to block that shot, and I was really surprised the way Rittich played this because he doesn't really make any really attempt to save it. But excellent stuff by Hoglander. Move into the free space in the neutral zone, cut underneath and get a shot off and get to the middle of the ice.
Yeah, and you get to the middle and good things can happen. And just an incredible snipe on Nils Höglander as well. Not much Dave Riddick could have done on that shot. You heard the call coming in, Connor Garland making it 2-0. And there were just a lot of, like you mentioned when we broke this down in the intermission shows, just a lot of quick decisions and about as connected and quick as they've looked on the power play in a while.
Assess and react.
Yeah.
That's honestly, you go through this whole play, you know, first the entry, Hughes bypasses around Quentin Byfield.
Well, having Hughes on entries helps, doesn't it?
Huge.
Yeah.
And he gets to, not inside the red line, closer to the blue line, but hits the drop pass. But they honestly just like rugby passes across a line.
Yeah.
And it's Hedl to Garland to Besser, who's the stationary guy at the blue line, gets the entry, sends it down low, and Garland and Hedl are all the way down below the goal line. It swings back up the wall to Brock, and you know, the way the Kings power play, you see power plays everywhere, or penalty kills, is when there's a loose puck, like they're going to go chase and put pressure on Brock Besser. And Brock notices Anderson coming, sees Hedl going to the net, and just shoots at Hedl, who gets a tip. And retrieval is there for Joshua below
the
line.
It's like a 3-on-1 all of a sudden for the Canucks.
It's a 3-on-2 down low when Brock shoots. And so then it becomes a 3-on-1 because Anderson's now way up
committed.
High and not going to get back in time. So Joshua just quickly taps it over to Hedl. Like, why waste time corralling it and, oh, can I make a nice – just tap it over to Hedl. He's going to have a better pass to make in front of the net. And Garland reads it perfectly. Edmondson goes below the net to chase after Hedl, but Garland rotates perfectly into space and Anderson couldn't recover in time. So it's just make quick plays and you find them in recovery mode, but they can't scramble fast enough.
No. And that's how the Canucks were able to make it 2-0. Nice to see Dakota Joshua get a point. I thought his stick work and decision-making tonight was fantastic. He was really the catalyst on the forecheck a lot. I thought he kept a lot of plays alive and defensively, a very active stick as well. And just another quick decision picks up a point well-deserved on the evening for Dakota Joshua. So the Canucks entered the third period with a 2-0 lead. And we mentioned that goal by Adrian Kempe. We broke it down a bit earlier. You know, Pettersson puts a little pressure on Kempe, who skates up ice, blows past him. And we mentioned how Höglander, if he's in the right spot there, makes it a little bit harder for Kempe, but he gets speed through neutral zone.
To be fair, he's in the right spot. He just chooses to leave it.
Yes, well, that's what he's... Yeah. But when Kempe comes with the puck, he's not in where he needs to be, but nonetheless goes through. But what I thought was kind of interesting was the way Lankinen waved at the shot, to me, looked like he didn't quite see the puck cleanly, and it kind of looked like on the replay from the reverse angle or the back angle that... the puck may have deflected, or at least his stick hit Myers' stick that created a little bit of a, perhaps, gap that didn't allow Lankinen to see it cleanly.
Yeah, it wasn't quite like what Riddick did in the first goal, because he makes a stab at it.
But it just
didn't look confident, and it just kind of whips right past him.
Yeah, and that made it 2-1. And then the 2-2 goal. Was it goalie interference? Was it not goalie interference? But ultimately, give Warren Fogel credit. He did it. He played that about as well as you can in front of the net.
Yeah, and I kind of thought Pew Suter was a bit flat-footed. There's an initial shot attempt, which enabled Fogel to get in deep. And I thought Suter just kind of let Fogel get it as Susie's trying to make this clear. And that's where Fogel gets a shot attempt on. It winds up at the point, and they whip it around, and in comes the shot, and Fogel makes an excellent tip. It was potentially high, and there's a YOLO goalie interference challenge. It was hopeful the whole time, but it looked under the bar on the out-of-zone shot.
I mean, hopeful at best, reckless at worst, that challenge, right? But ultimately, 2-2, the Kings have put a lot of pressure on. Now, Filip Hedl almost won the game with seconds to go when he went. He had a great scoring opportunity. Gets the puck to squeeze by Riddick, but it's swept off the line to allow the Canucks to allow the Kings to stave off the regulation loss. But in overtime, Canucks get off a penalty, and then Connor Garland steps up big and scores a goal. But, you know, we mentioned Filip Hedl. Offensively, he was in and around a lot of things tonight. Here he was yet again.
Yeah, and this puck gets chipped off the glass, and Hedl's actually behind Trevor Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And it just an injection of energy immediately from Hedl to win this puck. And, like, obviously Hughes is going to get a lot of the attention. Garland is the one to score this, his second goal of the night, game winner. Excellent job by him. But I like the energy from Hedl to just win this puck battle, regroup in the neutral zone, slide it to Quinn Hughes. He drops it for Garland, does a great job using Brant Clark as the screener, and just beats Riddick.
Yeah, and it's Filip Hedl, who, since coming over to Vancouver now, has now picked up, I believe it is 5 points in 7 games.
That sounds right.
That's 5 points in 7 games.
I won't challenge your math on this one.
Yeah, no, so there is a real bottom line. It's not, I mean, for a Canucks team that struggled to score, 5 and 7 is actually, you know, pretty solid. A lot of guys have had a hard time scoring, but a nice night from Filip Hedl, getting 2 assists on the evening. You mentioned Quinn Hughes, he got an assist on that play as well. And a sight for sore eyes with him coming back into the lineup. I nearly had a meltdown on the pregame show if Quinn Hughes was going to be out tonight, but he was in, thankfully. And Quinn met with the media postgame. Well, actually met with TNT. Here he is chatting with the TNT boys after a 3-2 win over the Kings.
Quinn, thanks for joining us. Listen, it's a joy for us to see you back on the ice playing. And I just have to ask you, because we're doing the pregame in here, and I felt like you were throwing some pump fakes at us where you were on the ice and then off the ice. We heard you were a game-time decision. How much of a real game-time decision was it? How close to puck drop was this?
Yeah, I mean, it was I had a discussion with Rick and Footy after warm-ups, and I don't know what I ended up playing today, but I think the plan was to kind of, you know, lower my minutes and get me back into the game smoothly and, you know, try to get 15, 16 minutes and survive the night and then hopefully, you know, build some confidence there and be ready to go tomorrow and Saturday.
Quinn, Biz here. Incredible game, especially battling through injury. I was going to ask about another defenseman, Marcus Pettersson, who came over from the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, did you realize how good he was, especially defensively, before he came over? It just seems like he brings all the little details to his game.
Yeah, he's obviously a really good player. I can't say I, you know, watched the Pens too much, but obviously knew that he had some abilities and was a really good, you know, top four shutdown defenseman, penalty kills, competitive, and just being able to see that, it's a huge add to our group. I feel really confident with our D-core back there, and you know, I think Adam Foote's, you know, the best coach I've ever had, so he's gonna propel his game as well.
Quinn, it says for some of those expected to dip their toe in the waters, you played 21 minutes 38 seconds, which was outstanding. Considering you thought you were going to play only 16 minutes. I want to ask you about the Four Nations. You didn't play, but there was a chance you could have gotten in that tournament. Give me your feedback and your take after watching Team USA play against the Canadians.
Yeah, I was really proud of those guys. I mean, it was tough because, you know, the cool thing about USA Hockey, we kind of all grew up, you know, through the program and know the same people, same teachers. We all went to Pioneer High School and same story. So I've gotten to know a lot of those guys over the course of the year. So to not, you know, play with those guys, it was hard, but you know, I think there's a lot to look forward to. You know, they looked really good, and, you know, that game could have went either way. And going into next year in the Olympics, I think we should be, you know, pretty excited about that.
Quinn, Hank here. Before the game, we talked to your coach, and he talked about how much you love the game and how badly you want to be out there. Can you talk about how tough it is for you when you're out with an injury, not being part of the team?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard. I think I played like 180 straight games before this. I was injured for 4 in January. Then I think I missed 6, you know, just, you know, previously before this. So it's hard and not really used to that. But, you know, I've been fortunate in my career where I've, you know, been able to be available. And, yeah, it's hard. And especially with the new guys we got, obviously wanted to, you know, play with these guys and get acclimated to the team. But I had to be smart too, you know, even just tonight, knowing where my body was after the game right now, I definitely, you know, feel confident in the fact that I took the time that I needed. So hopefully I can, you know, smooth sailing here on out.
Quinn, it's Biz. One last one. Appreciate all your time. You mentioned Adam Foote, the best defensive coach you've ever had. What exactly makes him the best coach that you've ever had?
Man, I could, it's, hard to break that one down, but I just find, like, there's a lot of coaches out there that, you know, scream and yell, and they want to, you know, bully their players, intimidate their players, and this is a guy that I would say coaches his defensemen, coaches his players like he'd want his kids coached, and then on top of that, with all the experience he has, and, you know, Rick said it before, he doesn't, you know, think of himself as a coach, he thinks of himself as a teacher, and he's just teaching us, and Footy and Rick's job is to win games, but also it's to make everyone a better player. And, you know, you want to be a better player in March than you were September, and then hopefully a better team as well. And I think it's not just process, you know, results-based wins and losses. It's trying to make, you know, people, better players. And, you know, over the course of my 3 years with these guys, my game's kind of taken off here. And that's a big part to them. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Well said. Really
appreciate it. Thank you so much, Quinn, for your
insight. Thanks so much for your time and congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, fellas.
That is Canucks captain Quinn Hughes, who made his return to the lineup tonight, and some really big praise for Adam Foote and Rick Tocchet. And I thought Sean made a great point here to the text inbox. He says, it's clear Hughes really likes Tocchet, and Foote credits them for his play, and has said in the past Tocchet is the best coach he's ever had. Speaks volumes for the people whining about Tocchet and the staff.
Like, that's the biggest endorsement you're going to have, because it's Rick, ultimately, like, it's Rick Tocchet's job to get his players on his side.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have chatted about coaching philosophies and all these things a lot, of like, who's the best tactician and all that stuff matters. But ultimately, like, buy-in is always the most important thing. And that's your best player. Big check mark for both of those guys. Saying that publicly on the record, and it's not just lip service. He details the way, and just the way he's always talked about. And if you're Quinn Hughes, like, Rick Tocchet does put you in a very good position to succeed.
Yeah.
So I imagine it's very easy to like the guys too. But organizationally, if part of this next process is convince Quinn Hughes to stay, that's why it's such a big decision.
Yeah.
Move off of Rick Tocchet, which feels misguided.
Well, like I said, I think the Canucks want to keep talking. Mm-hmm. I think they're more than happy with how he's played. It just comes down to, are they going to be able to figure something out? That's going to be the question. And I don't think it's going to be a situation where they're going to enter into next season with the final year of his deal. I think they're going to
This season already feels like the option. It just gives you security.
Yeah, but that's it. But even the security, I think it's going to come down to let's get something done in season if we can, and just move forward.
Yeah, but the thing is like, it's almost been treated like a coach in the final year of his deal this season, right? They haven't offered up enough stability here in general, and it's led to one factor in all the chaos that has been this season.
Yeah.
But a huge endorsement there from Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, and a lot of people texting in Owen and Burnaby, Josh and Mission, and others saying Quinn Hughes, absolute gem, MVP, and that is why he's the captain. All right, let's welcome in the man we call the triple threat into the show. You watch him on TV, read him on digital, about to hear him on radio, and he is from L.A., Ian McIntyre.
Oh, what a release.
Yes. Yes. We have to do it right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's only so much ice cream music, right? Like,
yeah, and I mean,
if you've played it once, you've played it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Which I know you guys would like to play it 1,000 times.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't mind the ice cream music. We just can't overdo it. It just becomes, you can't just, you know, trample the bit. It becomes kind of old, right? And that's what I did not want to do. And you did further the conversation because you posted a photo of yourself enjoying some ice cream from LA. But we can leave the ice cream for dessert because the main course was actually worth talking about. And the main course tonight got the Canucks a victory.
Now, how would your broadcast instructors rate you on a segue like that?
Probably poorly. Bick didn't like it, I don't think.
I can picture Bick's eyes rolling right now at that.
No.
The dessert. Well, nice segue. It was the ice cream was an appetizer for me. The game was a fairly unsatisfying meal, but it certainly ended well for the Canucks, and good for them, because the third period was like a lot of their third periods this year when they've had a lead where they just, you know, and you got to give LA credit because they stepped up their game, but it feels like Vancouver just tries to play at times in a prevent defense when they're up in the third, instead of continuing to go forward and push. And you know, I don't think they were terrible by any stretch in the third, but they did have a 2-0 lead on the road that they gave up in a span of about 5 minutes, halfway through the third. And had they lost that game, you know, that would have been another huge mental blow to this team that's trying to reignite after the Four Nations break. They were playing so well before it and just hadn't scored in those two games since. So it was, as Quinn said, it was a huge win. It's something you hear a lot, but I think for Vancouver, this was one that they had to have under the circumstances. And, you know, Connor Garland kind of snatched a goal out of nothing in overtime. I thought it was interesting that the Canucks finally found a way to win in overtime, and that's by skating 4-4, although you don't want to have to do it by taking a penalty and killing that and then still continuing on. But it was, it was resilient. And apart from or amid everything that's happened to the Canucks, the good things, bad things, a lot of it of their own doing, they have been a resilient team, and they were tonight. That was an important win for them.
For the fans, Ian, it feels like this is the reality that's going to be, right? It's going to be tense. It's going to be close. And living in moments, it's not always going to be blown leads, but like this is the design of how they're going to get through these next 24 games in this low event environment. Did it look differently being there than how we might view it through the TV screen of like it felt challenging, or was this viable to do for 24 more times here?
Well, I think this is how the team is configured. This is how the team is built right now. You know, they had, you know, two game breaking forwards, and one of them was traded and the other one has struggled to a confounding degree. Not just for a couple of weeks or 12 games, but 12 months now. And so until they find a way to just have more natural offensive scoring in their lineup, this is the way that they're going to play. I think they've decided this is the way they're going to play to try and be successful. And they have been more successful playing this way. But you know, if your question is it artistic and thrilling to watch? Well, not on a lot of nights it's not, and probably tonight it wasn't. But, you know, no event hockey is better than low event hockey if you're leading a game on the road. And the Canucks took the lead 10 minutes into the first period and doubled it in the second. And, you know, you do what you have to do to try to win games. I don't think, let's put it this way. If people are critical of the team for the way they're playing when they win, theoretically, then they should be thrilled with the team when they entertain and lose. And we know that hasn't been the case. Certainly it wasn't the case in the Wild West days when, you know, Boudreau was coaching the team. And so, you know, if you want the team to be successful, I think right now this is the best way for the Canucks to try to be successful. But it's certainly not the most artistic hockey. I've heard Patrick Alvin say he thinks that winning hockey would be exciting. And I think that's true to a degree, but they have to win obviously more than what they've won so far this year, and they have to win a bunch in the playoffs. And right now that still feels a long way away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's still 20, like Bick said, 24 games to go and a lot of work to do to make the postseason. But, you know, based on points, have played one more game in Calgary, but back in a playoff spot with one more point than the Flames. But, you know, as far as Quinn Hughes is concerned and Connor Garland post game, we didn't play the audio, but he did say that Hughes is a top three player in the world. And that doesn't sound ridiculous given how good Quinn Hughes has been. But what did you make of the way he looked in his return?
Yeah, I mean, it was great that he had 21 minutes. He had some of his trademark dazzle, you know, his agility in shaking and defenders and spinning away to create space for himself. But clearly is not the Norris Trophy Quinn Hughes, nor should anybody expect him to be, after missing nearly 4 weeks, the most serious injury of his career. But anytime a guy like that comes back into the lineup and by all appearances survives his initial test and still plays, you know, 21 minutes and is noticeable, you know, that's a very good thing for the Canucks. I mean, ultimately, for them to have any chance to do anything, whether they're going to be a high-scoring team or a low-event team, they need their best player, and Quinn Hughes is, you know, far and away this team's best player. You could argue top three in the world. I'm sure Connor Garland would. I was almost going to ask him, so is it McDavid and MacKinnon and then Hughes? I suspect that was the order. But whether he's top three or top five or top 10, he is one of the very best players on planet Earth and probably the best player that the Canucks have ever had.
Yeah.
So obviously to get him back in the lineup is a very good thing.
Yeah, no question about that. Before we let you go, Ian, two things. One, how was the ice cream you were eating?
Well, I mean, everything requires context, which is, you know, kind of how I have tried to build my career,
right?
Providing context. So this is free ice cream out of a machine that produces it in large quantities, and the sauce choices are out of a plastic jug that you squeeze.
Okay.
And, you know, the accoutrements are, I think it was chopped nuts or sprinkles and or bits of Oreo cookie.
Mm.
So it was fantastic.
Oh, that's, I mean, some, yeah, if it's free, it's fantastic, right? So
yeah, I mean,
high bar for Anaheim, man. This is a, you're on a hat trick watch all of a sudden.
Yeah, I don't believe Anaheim has ice cream. There's not many places in the league that has ice cream.
Yeah.
Toronto, for all its flaws, they used to, and maybe they still do, they brought out Haagen-Dazs ice cream bars during the intermission. And, you know, those are obviously fantastic. But I'm thinking of maybe starting something with the ice cream. Well,
there
I guess
go.
I already have yeah. started something with the ice cream. But I think maybe I can post more photos for people.
Yeah.
Of ice cream or me enjoying ice cream, or maybe even just have like ice cream bombs, like a city street, but there in the corner, if you look closely, there's a gelato shop or something. I'm going to see where this ice cream can take me. Cause I know there's no future in journalism.
Well, you know what? Ice
so
cream
maybe
is...
this ice cream thing will work out.
Ice cream is timeless. We know that. So that's going to work out fine. And Ray from Olympic Village was asking about the taco truck. And you sent me and Bick a photo of you being at the taco truck. So did you enjoy the taco truck too?
I did. In fact, you won't believe this. I'm staring at the taco truck right now. And I'm walking towards it. His lights are still on, although last time he had closed by now. But his lights are still on. And I had a chicken quesadilla on whatever day, Monday, when I arrived in L.A. Went to the taco truck, chicken quesadilla with sour cream that he put inside the quesadilla.
Oh,
like
wow.
Not just a cup of sour cream that you dipped your quesadilla into, but was baked in. And it was a handful to eat. I'll say that. I'm glad that nobody had me on camera trying to wrestle that quesadilla and spilling it all over myself. But it was fantastic. And I think it's probably not that one, but I've told you guys this before. The best quesadilla that I've ever had was from that truck.
Well, if you want to get a late night snack, hit it before you have to leave. So we'll let you go, Ian. Great stuff as always. And look forward to reading your latest on Sportsnet.ca. Great piece on Brock Besser as well. And we look forward to chatting with you tomorrow from Anaheim.
Thanks. I know you guys had a radio show to do, but did you notice if I was in the background of the shot of Murph's walk-off interview with Connor Garland?
I haven't noticed, to be honest.
Why? What did you do?
Well, I was thinking, you know, like Brad Pitt's character in Ocean's 11, he's always
yes.
eating something.
Yes.
That I should just have something nearby. So anytime I'm on camera, I can start to eat. And it can be a thing.
I like this character move for you.
I'm spitballing here. I'm trying to determine what my future with food is going to be in the public realm.
You know what? Just, you know, go road to road, you know, game to game, we figure it out. You know, this is a nice little side story for us.
Yeah, I mean, if I could get free food out of this somehow, it would all be worthwhile.
Well, yeah.
We used to get into journalism for that purpose, for that singular
purpose.
Free food,
yes.
Of getting free food, but nobody feeds us anymore for free.
There's no free food.
Although the ice cream was free tonight from the Kings, so another good thing.
So there you go. So some free ice, cheap ice cream, that was very enjoyable.
Yes, it was. I loved it. I kind of maintain that there's no such thing as bad ice cream, but Riccio disagreed with me.
Well, Riccio's a snob when it comes to these things. We know.
What does Riccio know?
Yeah,
come on. I know.
Well, here we'll talk.
Thinks he's all mighty Italian gelato knowledge. That wasn't a sentence. That was a bunch of stream of consciousness. But you get the picture.
That's right.
He is kind of snobby about his gelato.
He is. Great stuff, Ian. Get home safe, and we'll chat again tomorrow.
All right. Well, I don't know if it was great stuff, but we'll chat again tomorrow, and maybe I'll have more ice cream.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. I'm not going to put it past you.
All right. See you guys.
See you. That's Ian McIntyre. Make sure to check out his latest on sportsnet.ca. That brings us to the end of our show. We're back at it tomorrow. The Canucks take on the Ducks in Anaheim, and hopefully we talk about back-to-back Canucks wins. Bick is back on the People Show. I'm back on Canucks Central tomorrow. Special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory and all of you for listening and participating to the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.